It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And joining us right now on the phone is Drew Dittmer, a native species coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. And I realize before we jumped on and into our conversation here, Drew, your title is much longer than that. but will native species coordinator work?
That's plenty. That's just fine.
All right. I'm excited for our conversation today. I told you before we went on the air here that we have not had this conversation with the division in all the years we've done this show. We often talk about snakes and safety around rattlesnakes, but that's usually about the extent of what we talk about, or we'll talk about, the endangered tortoises or something like that. But for the first time in a long time, there's some changes coming to people that actually like to go after the reptiles that live in Utah. And I think people might be surprised, as I was, to find out that there are 61 native species that call Utah home.
Oh, yeah. And I would say there's at least 61 native species. The future of how those species get divided up or lumped together is going to be interesting. And there's at least a handful of things that probably occur in Utah that we just haven't formally verified yet, so the number's likely to go up.
Yeah. That 61, by the way, is a native species of reptiles, but then you got to add the amphibians onto that. How many are there?
About 15.
And so we're talking frogs and, I mean, I wouldn't even be able to name
frogs,
them all.
Toads, and salamanders. There's one native salamander and the rest of everything else is a frog or a toad, as you guys, as most people would recognize it.
Yeah. Before we jump into the specifics of the rule changes, it wasn't that long ago also that I got word that the Gila monster has been named as our official reptile in the state. I didn't even know they lived here.
Yeah, they are endemic to the very southwestern corner of the state. They occur in the Mojave Desert, and we have just a little sliver of Mojave Desert in southwestern Utah around St. George. And, they can be found down there.
You still can't collect the Gila, the tortoises, the desert tortoises that are protected, and several toads and frogs that are out there, can you?
No, we have several species that we have ongoing conservation programs or conservation concerns for, and those species will still be in a prohibited category for collection. So, like you said, it'd be the desert tortoise and the Gila monster are prohibited from any kind of collection. Boreal toad, Arizona toad, Columbia spotted frog are all prohibited from collection. And there's another one, the relic leopard frog will be prohibited. The relic leopard frog doesn't currently occur in Utah, but it used to. It occurs in Nevada and Arizona, and we're exploring the possibility of a repatriation program for that.
I would imagine the challenge is for people to be able to identify each of those species, right?
There's a lot of very qualified amateur naturalists out there. The activity of going out and looking for reptiles and amphibians is colloquially called herping, which is derived from the term herpetology. So herping is just, it's like birding. So you're going out into the field looking for reptiles and amphibians. And just like there's lots of amateur birders out there who are really, really good at identifying birds, there's lots of amateur herpetologists who are really, really good and really qualified at identifying reptiles and amphibians. And, you know, we live in a place where there's lots of really good field guides and resources for the amateur person to acquire and learn how to identify these things.
Yeah.
And so a lot of individuals are quite good at it.
Is it safe to say that if you come upon any tortoises in southern Utah, you better just leave them alone? I mean, those desert tortoises have held up even housing projects because of the habitat protection down there.
Yeah, we definitely want to emphasize that please do not pick up, handle desert tortoises. If you are driving along, it can be okay to move a tortoise from the middle of the road to the side of the road from the direction that's facing, but that would be the maximum amount of handling that we would want anyone to do. Desert tortoises can be very sensitive to handling. They can void their bladder or go pee, and that they're storing that water. They're a desert animal, and that's where they keep their waters and their bladder. So if they void that water and they don't have another place to recharge their hydration, it can be pretty stressful for them, and it can even cause them to die.
Yeah. All right, so let's start then by going back and looking at what the rules and regs were as they existed, and then we can transition into how the changes have come about.
Say for brevity's sake, I will just say that the rules as they used to exist were fairly complicated. So it used to be that if somebody wanted to capture a wild king snake, for example, and then keep that organism, they had to apply for what we call a certificate of registration. And that's just a category of permit that we dole out to people who apply for and meet the criteria for that application to get that permit.
And it took quite a bit of time to do, right?
Yeah, it was a lengthy process to get through, and it could be expensive in some cases. And so, yeah, herping and going out herping and then herpetoculture is the other term of like keeping reptiles and amphibians in captivity. It's admittedly a niche activity, but there's a number of individuals that are very passionate about it and they're very involved in it. And we wanted to better accommodate those individuals rather than make them go through this lengthy procedure. And some people do this as families. So some people do this with their kids, and having this lengthy, detailed, legalese-dominated permit application process just wasn't really accommodating all the age groups and all the backgrounds out there.
All right. So along come the changes that I guess will take effect January 1 of next year. And how did we speed up the process?
Yeah, so we will move towards a permit that people can purchase online. We'll have a place online on our website where people can purchase their permit. Before they purchase their permit, they'll be required to take a short education course, which will be the equivalent of a series of PowerPoint slides that they'll click through, and then they will take a short exam at the end of those PowerPoint slides. PowerPoint slides are just going to cover very general things like the reptile and amphibian diversity that's in Utah, safety around venomous snakes, and we're definitely going to cover in some depth the fact that re-releasing reptiles and amphibians that have been in captivity is something we want to discourage. It's illegal to do that anyway, but it's problematic. Any reptile or amphibian that has been in captivity for any length of time can develop diseases or pathogens that it can then reintroduce to wild populations, which is very problematic. So the education course is going to cover that in some amount of detail. And so once somebody takes the education course, they can purchase their permit, and then they can go herping, and they can collect up to a legal bag limit of reptiles and amphibians. We've put all of Utah's native species into bag limit categories. And the only thing that'll be required after that is that they report the locality, the species, and the number that they took, and they report that within 72 hours back on the same online forum that, or the same online portal that they acquired the permit.
Okay.
And so that data that they use to report the localities and the species that they find is going to be extremely useful for us. It's very difficult to survey for these things, and the fact that there's people who really just want to do this in their free time gives us really valuable data to inform our management and conservation of these animals.
Does the bag limit vary species to species?
Yeah, there'll be three bag limit categories, and I can't rattle off all the species off the top of my head. They're roughly 75 or so, but there'll be 10 species of reptiles in what is called the limited bag limit category, and so that will be 2 per year and 4 in total possession. There'll be, off the top of my head, about 15 reptiles and 10 or so amphibians in what we call the standard bag limit category. That'll be 3 per year and 9 in total possession. And then we have one sort of unique bag limit category called expanded. That's 25 per year and 50 in total possession. There's 4 lizard species that we have put in that bag limit category. There are some snakes that people keep in captivity that only reliably eat lizards. So the the numbers in that category and the fact that we have really common lizards in that category allows people to go out and capture food for their pet snakes.
Is it snakes that are most often sought after by these people? Do we know?
Generally speaking, yeah, there's a handful of species of king snakes that occur in Utah that are the most valued and the most sought after. There are some people that are into lizards as well, but it's definitely less than the people who are into the snakes.
Yeah, and you brought up something that I think is important and I'm sure is covered at least in part in getting your certificate and going through that education process, and that is that it isn't as easy as everyone might think it is to keep these things alive in captivity. And sometimes, you know, their desired food source may not be fun for you to actually catch and keep feeding them either.
Yeah, there's a bit of a learning curve involved in this, and we had a user group of individuals who've engaged in this activity and applied for the permits for several years that helped us develop this rule. And there's a lot of people in the user group that admitted that this is quite challenging, but it's a fun challenge for them to figure out how to keep these snakes alive and in some cases breed them. And they're generating useful knowledge by doing that, but they also admitted that you can't just go out and capture a male and female pair of snakes and bring them home and expect to be immediately successful. It can be quite a bit of work to figure out what makes them want to eat and what makes them want to breed.
Yeah. All right. If people want more information, obviously, they just go to the division website, which is always wildlife.utah.gov. It's beautifully new designed, by the way, if you haven't been there lately. And there is a whole other set of certificates of registration if you want to collect rattlesnakes, for instance, too, that they'll need to be aware of as well.
Yeah, if they want to collect venomous snakes in Utah, they'd still need to go through the COR process,
okay,
the certificate of registration process.
And again, all these new bag limits that we've talked about don't take effect until January 1 of 2020, but we're recently passed. That's why we're talking about it now. So I would just encourage anybody, if this sounds like something you'd like to give a try, it'd be fun to go out. I mean, I remember as a kid chasing lizards in the foothills around Pocatello, Idaho, and it's pretty good sport for a young kid as long as you know what to go after and what not to touch or grab.
Yeah, and just for what it's worth, there's another app that people can put on their phone. It's not a UDWR app. It's just it's a general app that's available called iNaturalist. And I would really, most people have a smartphone these days, and I would very much encourage people to put that app on their phone. If they take a picture of a lizard, a frog, a snake, something in Utah, it automatically populates the Herps of Utah project in iNaturalist. And if they don't know what it is, there's a whole group of people that follow that can help them identify it. And we use that information as well at Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. And we'd really like to see more people using iNaturalist.
All right. Awesome, Drew. Thanks for the information. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just follow up and say, like, you don't need the permit to go out and just look for these things, capture them, take their photographs, and let them go. No
right.
permits required for that. So
right.
just to go out and enjoy the wildlife species, have at it. Please do.
All right. Drew Dittmer, our native species coordinator here in the state of Utah, and a herpetologist, I think. I got that right this time, did I?
Yeah, nailed it.
All right. Drew, great talking with you. Thanks so much for sharing the information this morning.
Thank you.
Joining us for the next couple of minutes is Ginger Wicks, who is the executive director of the Park City Area Restaurant Association. We'll tell you in a minute why we have Ginger on today. But first, since she's on her way back from Lake Powell, she's going to be our Lake Powell reporter here for just a second. We've been talking about, all the great things there are to do at Lake Powell, Ginger, but you're back from what sounds like a fantastic visit.
Yeah, I was there for a week, and the weather was glorious, and the water temperature was amazing, and I'm sure it will be hard to come back from all this, but I am headed back.
Were you houseboating?
Yep, we were on a houseboat, so we went out of the Waweep area, and it was great.
Oh, yeah, we hear great things, and obviously with all of the snow that we got during the winter months, which you know plenty about being up there in Park City, it should be a great year for water everywhere in the state, including Lake Powell, and man, we've needed some help in raising the water in that area, so that's great.
Yeah, the lake was rising 6 inches a day.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And people need to know, what is there? There's 100 and some, 140 miles of shorefront or beach areas along that?
Yeah.
Wow. Coming up 6 inches a day.
I think it is. Yeah, it's crazy. So that's a ton of water.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. All right. Good news. And you hit it just right for temperatures, too. I told you before we jumped into our conversation, we usually go in the fall because the water temperatures are still good, but the air temperature is much better than it is in July and August down there. So one of my favorite things is coming up. We want to make sure is on everybody's radar. June 22nd, it is the return of Savor the Summit. And for those that don't know what it's all about, explain it to them.
So Savor the Summit is an outdoor dining party in Park City. We close Main Street down in the historic Park City District. We close the road entirely, and the participating restaurants create their dining tables right in the middle of Main Street. We have a little over 20 restaurants participating this year, and so it's just one big dining festival with music and all kinds of wonderful things right down the middle of Main Street.
Yeah, it almost becomes a big competition between the different restaurants, too, to outdo each other, doesn't it?
It does. It does. They definitely, and in addition to all the culinary talents we've got going, there are a lot of creative decorations happening as well.
And there are lots of ways people can go about this, but I'm a little surprised that here we are a week out and there are still some reservations available at some very nice restaurants up there.
Yeah, yeah. So although I think that's going to change here in the next couple of days, but yes, we definitely have some restaurants that still have availability. Price ranges vary depending on what restaurant you choose. You don't buy a ticket to Savor the Summit. You make a reservation directly with whatever participating restaurant you want to dine with. They each offer their own unique menu, wine pairing, beer pairing, whiskey tastings, all that good stuff in addition to their menus. So, you know, depending on what your budget is or your culinary tastes, you can find somebody that fits what you're looking for.
Yeah, and there's the old standbys, the favorites, and from my experience of the past and having talked with you in past years up there, I know that a lot of people will make their reservations year in and year out at the same place. It becomes kind of a traditional kickoff to summer for many people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we've pushed back a week. Typically, we're the same weekend as Father's Day, but we pushed back this year, so we're a week later. And that was, to give us a little bit better odds with Mother Nature. Not that we've had a problem, but you know, you never want to risk it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I noticed, yesterday, as a matter of fact, that Deer Valley's talking about finally getting the, lifts open for some mountain biking up there, which makes makes my heart sing. It's one of my favorite things to do during the year, but Mother Nature's been so good to us. Everything's delayed a little bit. I just look at the variety. You know, I started to say, you look at some of the old standards like the eating establishment that's up there, but there are such a variety of foods from Bangkok Thai on Main to Bodega to Flanagan's Irish Pub and Restaurant. Fletcher's, of course, is up there. So many to choose from.
Yeah, and in addition to all the restaurants that are participating, another option is the Spirit Garden area, the High West Spirit Garden, which will be located on at the intersection of Heber Avenue and Main Street. And we've teamed up with the Brass Tag from Deer Valley Resort. And for $55, you can buy a VIP ticket to the Spirit Garden and get three app servings from the Brass Tag and two drinks of your choice, drinks being, of course, High West whiskeys and cocktails and Vine Lore wines and Red Rock beer. So for a $55 price point, that's a great way to go as well. And then, of course, we also have music programmed in the Spirit Garden throughout the night as well. So that's a fun alternative. If you're not wanting to sit down at a restaurant, you can still come up and be a part of it and enjoy that. And if you're not interested in buying the VIP ticket to the Spirit Garden, that's fine. You can simply come in and have drinks. You just need to buy the VIP ticket in advance if you want to do that to get the food option.
Yeah, and I've got a number to call there, too. If you want the VIP treatment in the Spirit Garden, it's 435-901-8895. And some great music entertainment is planned.
Yeah.
Many of these establishments are already sold out, but I was counting 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's, you know, 10 or 12 that still may have some availability. What's the best way for people to actually figure that out and get their reservation?
So if you go to savorthesummit.com, you can see a complete list of who is participating and whether they are sold out or not. Menus are posted there as well, so you can see various price points for the different restaurants and what they're serving. And then, of course, if they have availability, give them a ring, and hopefully they have the number of seats that you're looking for.
Yeah.
But I do encourage everyone to do that sooner than later. This event sells out every year, and certainly being a week out, whatever is left is going to go quickly.
Right. If you haven't had the experience, it really is something special to see Main Street. And everybody's familiar with Park City Main Street, but see that entire street lined with nothing but tables and food being served. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. We say this about camping all the time, but for some reason, the food always just seems to taste better outside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it is a fun kickoff to the summer as well. So it's you know, just coming up and wandering the street and checking out all the tables is fun as well. So it's a great event that everybody should certainly experience.
Yep. That's coming up next Saturday, June 22nd, 6 o'clock. But don't wait till then to find out how you can be a part of it. Go to parkcityrestaurants.com/savorthesummit. We'll see you up there. Ginger, I'm glad you had a great time at Lake Powell. Now you get to look forward to a great meal next week. So thanks for checking in with us, and happy summer.
Thank you. Thanks so much, and I'll look forward to seeing everybody next Saturday.
Live breaking news now on the mobile app for KSL News Radio. Listen at home or anywhere you go. Brought to you by Any Hour Services, KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City, KSL News Radio. This is Utah's news station.